Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Oregon's a really good team. They've been on a roll. I don't want to say necessarily they got luck because they are a good team, but they stole the Pac-12 championship from us. So I think we match up well, though, and we both have chips against our shoulder because we beat them and they got the championship from us. So I think it'll be a great matchup. Not too often do you see two Pac-12 schools, number one and number two, match up in the Sweet 16, so I think that'll be interesting as well. But we're just going to have to execute our game plan like we did tonight and take it to them.
That's Isaiah Mobley on a Sunday night after USC dominated Bill Self and Kansas. It's USC-Oregon Sunday night. You can hear it right here on the flagship of the BFT Radio Network, 750 The Game, and streaming everywhere. Televised on TBS with Nance and Raftery and Hill on the call. John Wilner, Bay Area News Group, San Jose Mercury News, kind enough to spend a few minutes with us. John, what did you make of those comments by Isaiah Mobley when he made them that Oregon stole the Pac-12 championship from USC?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's how USC feels, and if I were them, maybe I would feel the same way. I don't think that that's what happened. It's a complicated situation that actually involves three teams, multiple cancellations and postponements and COVID issues, but Oregon did everything they could to play all the games it could, home and a road. And so I would disagree with that assessment.
Should Oregon take this as a little bit of motivation? Not that they would need any more, the fact that they're playing a conference rival in the Sweet 16.
I mean, I can't imagine that they would need motivation. It's not only a conference rival in the Sweet 16, but it's a team that beat you by 20, right? So whatever it was. I mean, maybe, you know, kids are kids, so maybe it's a little bit extra, but they got plenty else to play for.
It's a little bit, I don't know if it's disappointing, but I feel like there's some meat left on the bone with the Pac-12, the fact that one of their teams is going to lose, right, in the regional semifinals. You did an excellent job with a deep dive, and I encourage everybody to read it. Follow at Wilner Hotline and mercurynews.com. Subscribe to that and check this out. But you got down to the nitty-gritty, John, with your research of why it was that Oregon and USC are playing each other at this stage of the tournament. What was the primary takeaway once you did all that research and then you kind of were able to get to that final phase of simplicity? In your mind, what was the final, you know, the most important takeaway of why USC and Oregon are playing this early?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of depends on your perspective, right? It guarantees the conference has got a team in the Elite Eight, which means it guarantees the conference has one win from the Final Four. And it also, you know, you could argue that they're in a weaker region, both teams, based on the top four seeds in each region. They may have gotten the better break or the better draw. And we've kind of seen that play out, you know, a little bit with the quality of the number two and three seeds in their bracket. But, you know, it's the process is very complicated and there's a lot of rules. And basically what happened was Oregon is in the right place and SC had to get moved around because that spot, the West, is not where USC should have been, but because BYU couldn't play in a Sunday or a Friday Sunday spot, and because Texas Tech was also limited, USC ended up being placed in the West. I mean, it's really complicated, but the bottom line is it wasn't a conspiracy against the Pac-12. They were trying to help the Pac-12, in fact, by giving SC the weaker number 11 seeds. And the conference is one win against Creighton or Gonzaga from getting to the Final Four.
Yeah, that is pretty amazing. And like, I didn't realize until you put it out in your article as well, just how rare the Pac-12 getting to the Final Four has been, and it gets them, at least it guarantees them, a spot in the Elite Eight to be one step closer. And it kind of parallels with that conversation, John, and it's a good topic. Has the Pac-12 been criminally underrated, / has it earned a few apologies from national pundits that have severely kind of miscast how good this conference has been?
It's kind of hard to say, but partly because of the pandemic, right? I mean, the Pac-12 was bad for 2 years, really bad in 2018 and 19. And I think it was better last year, and it probably would have gotten six teams in the tournament, but there was no selection day, right? So the improvement that was actually taking place last year was not available for the nation to see in the tournament because there was no tournament. So that narrative that built up in 2018 and 2019 basically continued through this season. And the conference lost a lot of its highest profile games in November and December. Those games have a huge impact on where teams are seeded. The reason it lost, in some cases, there was some COVID issues that the Pac-12 was facing and other conferences weren't. But it lost. It was like 0-6 against AP top 25 teams. So, it carried that narrative all the way through here, and even though the teams were better than their seeds were justified based on performance, if that makes sense, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what happens. You lose all those games in November and December, and that's going to affect where you get seeded. That's just the way the system's set up. So it is, it's a two-year climb, really, but this is the first time that we are getting to see it in the tournament because there was no tournament last year.
I mean, and there's probably a decent amount of recency bias, right? I mean, if next year's tournament comes around and the Pac-12 goes, they put six teams in, but, they go 2-4 in the first round, then we're resetting the conversation back to where it was a couple of years ago, right? I mean, it's what have you done for me lately?
To a certain extent, but I do think that, those non-conference games in November and December, those are important. And those, those can kind of help offset a little bit what happens in the tournament because you start from a higher place, so to speak. Pac-12, it's kind of like in football, right? I mean, Washington-Auburn, those games affect the way the entire season is viewed. And it's the same with basketball. UCLA against Ohio State, for instance. Colorado at Tennessee. Those games... those games have a real impact on how the conference is viewed for the whole season.
Talking to John Wilner, Bay Area News Group, USC beats Drake in the first round, 72-56. They hammer Kansas, 85-51. Oregon gets that no contest with VCU, and then they in turn hammered Iowa on Monday morning, 95-80, and it was not close in the middle to late portions of the second half. Which program surprised you more to this point, USC or Oregon, or are you really not surprised by either program's success as they meet one another Sunday night?
I mean, I'm not really surprised about Oregon. I thought they'd beat Iowa. That was a good matchup for them. And certainly, you got a much better chance of getting to the Sweet 16 if you only have to play one game instead of two.
Yeah.
But that was, that was a good matchup for them. I picked Oregon to get to the Sweet 16, so I guess I can't say that I'm too surprised. Maybe I didn't think that they would win as comfortably as they did, but the outcome, I kind of had expected. SC, SC is an interesting team because they got, when both Mobleys are playing well, they're awfully difficult to beat. And I don't know the extent to which Kansas's COVID problems kind of disrupted them. They didn't have some guys available for practice all week. that it's a the COVID thing is certainly something you got to take into account, and it affects, you know, it can affect teams in ways we don't know because we don't see practices. But I would probably say, I mean, I certainly would never pick SC to beat Kansas by whatever it was, 30 points. No way. So in that regard, that was certainly a big surprise.
Either one of those teams, Oregon or USC, do you feel that when they're playing their best, they can give Gonzaga a shot? Or from what you've seen of the Bulldogs, similar to the rest of us, man, they just look so dominant right now. It's hard to imagine them losing before the Final Four.
Yeah, you know, I'm not huge on the Gonzaga train, to be honest.
Oh.
Not that they don't have a really good team, but I just can't help but think that the pressure is going to get to them at some point, right? Just like it did with UNLV in 1991. I mean, it is hard. Every round you go, that pressure to be stay undefeated builds. And I don't know if it's going to get them in the regionals or if it'll get them in the Final Four, but I don't think Gonzaga's going to win the title. Now, how will they do against SC and Oregon? You know, it's interesting because if the Mobleys are a very difficult matchup, offensively and defensively, and especially if Isaiah Mobley is playing as well as he is, SC could beat him, and I think Oregon could beat him too. Oregon would cause them some matchup problems. I think Oregon's versatility and quickness would cause them some issues. Now, Timmy would be trouble for Oregon down low, just like I think the Mobleys are going to be trouble for Oregon down low, right? That's a thing. I almost wonder if Oregon has a better chance to beat Gonzaga than it does SC just because of the matchups.
Wow. You like USC in this game Sunday?
I kind of do. Just the size. The way Isaiah Mobley's playing right now, I certainly do, right? If you told me Isaiah's going to be 2 of 11 from the field, then I would pick the Ducks. But
right.
The way he has played, the way he played the first weekend, I mean, if the number 2 pick in the NBA draft is only your second best player on the court, you're a pretty good team. And that's what has happened the last two games for the Trojans. So we'll see if that continues. But I think that's going to be the big thing for the Ducks. I don't think they can win the game if Isaiah is having a huge game. Because Evan's enough trouble by himself. If Isaiah's going crazy, you got no chance. I think I would think that Dan Altman is going to try to just figure out a way to, you know, shut Isaiah down. And if Evan scores 20, 25 points, you can still beat him. But you can't beat him if Isaiah's scoring 20 or 25 points.
John Wilner joining us on the BFT. John, we get to also talk about the Oregon State Beavers. Unbelievably, are in the Sweet 16. We'll get to their matchup with Loyola Chicago here in a moment. But from your vantage point, how impressive has this run been from Wayne Tinkle and company over the last 5 games, running the table in Vegas, needing every single one of those wins, and then pulling off a couple more upsets to get to the Sweet 16?
Yeah, it's incredible, isn't it? I mean, especially given where they were. You know, they played better the last, like, 2 weeks, I'd say, the last half of February. But, you know, middle of February, boy, they were not going so good. So from that point to now, it's amazing. I mean, you know, if UCLA makes one more free throw, makes both free throws with 3 seconds left in the quarterfinals, Oregon State's out of the Pac-12 tournament then. And we haven't heard another word from them. That's how kind of on the margins things are in March. But yeah, it's a remarkable run. It's the kind of run that you see every so often in other conferences. And the Pac-12 just hasn't had a team do this, just kind of come out of nowhere. I mean, Oregon was when they made the Elite Eight, I think it was, they were like when they made the Sweet 16 a couple years ago, they might've been a 12 seed, but they were much better than that.
Mm-hmm.
They were much better than that. Oregon State is just totally unexpected. So it's just, we don't see it that much out here.
I think that's part of what makes it so dang fun is, you know, there was no way to predict this kind of level of success from Oregon State. But now we've seen 80 minutes of really good basketball in the NCAA tournament from the Beavers to take down two teams that were more talented than them, including the possible number 1 pick in the NBA draft. is there an argument out there, to you at least, that says, hey, maybe this Beaver team, this is just a different team than we watched for 80% of the season. It's a different team, and they're just playing at a much higher level. They're 6.5-point underdogs to Loyola. It's a similar betting line that existed in the Tennessee game and the Oklahoma State game and all the Pac-12 tournament games, and they won all of those suckers. Is there any predictive element that, hey, Oregon State, they've got a chance here, even though the Ramblers are really, really good, especially defensively?
I mean, sure, they have a chance. Absolutely. A lot of it's going to depend on how they shoot it and how the other teams shoot it, right? And that's, I mean, the Pac-12, the biggest thing for the Pac-12 has been their opponents combined are shooting 27% from three-point range, right? And, I mean, Oklahoma State missed, 10 or 12 shots within 2 feet of the basket in the second half. I mean, some of it is how the ball bounces. Some of it is good defense, opportunistic play. You know, we'll see. If you told me on, next week, Oregon State has advanced to the Elite Eight, I would not be that surprised. I would pick Loyola, and I think one difference between Loyola and Oklahoma State and Tennessee is Loyola is much better coached. Porter Moser is a terrific coach, and they're not gonna outsmart Loyola in that regard. So. And Loyola's been there before, right? I mean, this is new territory for the Beavers, and Loyola's been there before. I almost think Oregon State is benefiting from the setup because instead of, you know, a normal year, they would have flown home, and they would have been celebrated on campus for 4 days before they turn around and go back to the Sweet 16. But they're staying in their, you know, hold up in Indy so they can kind of avoid all the distractions that they would find on campus and back home, and I think that's going to benefit them.
The last Pac-12 team that's made it this far is Mick Cronin and UCLA. What have you made of their run and their chances against Alabama?
You know, their first game was going to be the hardest, for sure, the opening weekend. And they came back. They were down about 12, 14 points against Michigan State, came back, found a way to win. I mean, you know, UCLA is well built for the tournament because a lot of the tournament is just grinding your way through possession after possession in the second half, kind of manufacturing points in odd fashions and playing tough defense in there. That's exactly the way Mick Cronin coaches. So I'm not surprised that they are this far. Certainly once they got past Michigan State, you could see this coming. And they've got two guys that are playing well. Jaquez and Juzang are shooting the ball well. So they've got a shot. I do think Alabama's very good. Big, athletic, and skilled. Very good, and this will be by far UCLA's toughest games so far.
John, so much appreciate the time. We'll try to circle back with you next week, and we'll see how many Pac-12 teams are left standing.
Yeah, will do. Thanks for having me.
There he is, John Wilner, Bay Area News Group, at Wilner Hotline on Twitter. So much good stuff, and love those insights from Wilner. He likes USC over Oregon. And he thinks Gonzaga is vulnerable against either one. That's pretty interesting. We'll unpack that, talk a little bit more about that, plus more on the Blazers trade today. Newbie and Sampson in for Gonzano. The music definitely is a different when I'm in the chair. It's true. It's what happens. It's part of the fallout. But yeah, let's let it ride. Yeah,
I'm vibing over here, man.
Mm. Yeah. Trying to come up with some Olshay parody on the fly with this, but I'm not feeling comfortable. like a Norm Powell. No. Oh, so good.
Oh, no.
Well, Gary's out the door, so is Rod. Norman is in. We'll continue to talk about that and much more. Final Hour BFD coming up.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Baltimore.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but
If you want to listen to more of the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.